Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you'll listen, your eyes may be open, and you may ultimately change your mind towards some of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, my mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to turn to Yahweh, to his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, to his terms and those that apply to his one and only covenant, so that through his always dependable Torah teaching, we will be able to replace religion with reason and thereby engage in an actual relationship with God. In our program yesterday, we were speaking about this new school that is being founded in Israel, called the Cain and Abel School of Prophets, and how it is designed to provide a new generation of young prophets with authorized sources to direct their spiritual experiences in both truth and honesty. And that's how we ended the program in yesterday's Shattering Myths program. So I just wanted to share a little bit more on this particular story, because first of all, it is astonishing that someone would name a prophecy school after two people, neither of whom were prophets, and then say that they're going to feed young minds with authorized sources when there is only one authorized source of prophecy. I mean, the only authorized source of prophecy is Yahweh. Period. End of conversation. Yahweh is the lone source of prophecy. And his prophets, his predictions, if you will, are contained in only one place, the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And so there's one source, and there's one place that they're recorded. So why would you need authorized sources?
You already have all the ones you need.
Okay.
So yesterday when you talked about this, I told you during the break that, when you hear something and you have that thing that goes off in your head that says this is bad, this is wrong, mm-hmm. you know, that I got that almost yeah. immediately from this. So I jumped out on the internet and I found some stuff out about it. For just 200 shekels, Yada, which is about $53, and in only 40 short classes, the Cain and Abel School for Prophets says it will certify anyone as a modern-day Jewish soothsayer.
Oh, a soothsayer.
Yes, isn't that amazing?
A soothsayer. What does God say about Yahweh? What does he say about soothsayers in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms?
I do not know the exact quote, but
that they're an abomination to him, and that he hates what they do, and he associates soothsayers with Hasatan, the adversary. So I'm not surprised that for 50 some odd shekels.
No, 200 shekels.
Oh, 200 shekels. I don't want to shortchange this man. That for 200 shekels that you can be a spokesperson on behalf of Satan.
You know what else you can also be for about 50 bucks?
What?
An ordained minister.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. You know, God hates religion, so when God had the Kohen, those who were set apart to serve, they were born into the role. They did not choose the role. They most certainly didn't pay a couple of hundred shekels to be so proclaimed by man. And it is interesting that when Yahweh established them, all they could do was what was authorized for them to do in the Torah. Nothing more. And they could not receive any money for doing it. None. They couldn't even own property, so that they could not become an elitist group. They were prohibited for owning property and could be paid no money for what they were doing. They could be fed. They could be given the material necessary to live, but they were not a compensated group, and they had no power. All they could do is serve the people by facilitating knowledge and understanding of the Torah.
Well, in only 40 short classes, though, I can become a
soothsayer.
I told you everything I told you yesterday. The alarm went off in my head, and then when I, as I continue to read more about it, I know that I was absolutely right. That I would not want to be anywhere near that.
Okay, but listen to this. This is what according to the course's syllabus, future prophets are going to learn about face reading. That's like palm reading, face reading, dream interpretation, and ways to achieve divine spirit. Now, there's only one way to achieve a divine spirit, and that's to come to know Yahweh, come to understand the terms and conditions of his covenant, and to act upon them. That is the only way.
Well, you know, if he teaches that, he's not going to have any students, because they'll get to that point, and they'll be like, hey, I got to go.
I got to go. So the school's core studies also include an introduction on the angels' ways of communication and participation in our lives. Now, if you are a student of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, you know there's no such thing as an angel. That is a transliteration of a Greek word, and the word in Greek is messenger, but it's a translation of the Hebrew word for messenger, malak. Yahweh has messengers. They are malak, and they are controlled by Yahweh. They don't have free will. They're in a command and control regimen. You can't go to a malak and say, hey, messenger, what I need is the following, or I would like a revelation. They don't work in that way. The way that the malak work is God tells them what he wants done. He can use them to protect people. He can use them to communicate something with someone. But we do not solicit them. They are ordered to do what they do by God. So there is nothing that you can do as a person to have any influence over a malak. None. That, so they participate only in lives at the direct instruction of Yahweh. And no way else. Through, although Chabad, who is the founder of the Cain and Abel school, does have an active messianic faction, and not everyone in the Hadistic movement approves of his initiative. Quote, it's a sham that delusional people who do not represent the rabbi or his doctrine continue to desecrate his legacy and drag Shabbat's name into bizarre areas. And so the rabbis do not approve. Now, part of that is because rabbinical Judaism is fixated on spirituality. It's Kabbalah. And Kabbalah and rabbinical Judaism are really woven tightly together. And Kabbalah is very demonic, very satanic form of spirituality. But Shmuel Hapazi insists he is completely serious. He says, I'm not a freak. I have solid answers to every single question on this subject. Is he also arrogant. I have been collecting material for the school for several years now. I am proficient in the material, and I have translated most of it from Russian to Hebrew. So, you're qualified to teach a school on prophecy by translating material found in Russian to Hebrew. Now, I want to tell you, if you want to speak on behalf of God, if you want to be able to predict the future through God's prophets, then what you need to do is to be able to translate from Hebrew into the language that you are speaking, not from Russian to Hebrew. He was asked, how do you identify false prophets? And he says, the truth is that there are many institutions today for the study of Kabbalah, for mysticism and black witchcraft, just as my institution is for producing soothsayers. And that does confuse people. I teach strictly kosher material and teach my students to distinguish between the true prophecy and false prophecy and between real dreams and false dreams.
And all for only 200 shekels.
Yes. Kosher is a corruption of the Hebrew term that is kodesh. Kodesh is the Hebrew word for set apart. From Yah's perspective, his name is set apart. His testimony, His Torah prophets and psalms are set apart. The rabbinical concept of kosher is that which is blessed by the rabbis. God's view of what is set apart and the rabbinical view of kosher have nothing in common. Literally nothing in common. They are apples and oranges. In fact, that would be too kind a concept because apples and oranges are both fruit. They have nothing in common. So this fellow is going to create material that is rabbinical in nature, kosher in nature. He said, how can you be trusted? He says, because I've already started doing it. That's how I can be trusted. I can be trusted because I'm engaged in training soothsayers. Is it any wonder this world is lost?
No. No, not at all.
How do you identify false prophets? Because the truth is that there are many institutions studying Kabbalah and mysticism and witchcraft. So I can identify false prophets because there are many institutions that are studying Kabbalah. Well, God tells us how to identify false prophets. Why didn't the guy simply quote Devarim 18? In Devarim, the 18th chapter, Yahweh expressly tells us how to identify a false prophet. You know, he says if that person speaks of about a God whose name is not Yahweh, he's not speaking for me, he's false. If he does not affirm that which I have said, he's false. If any one of his productions, a single one of his productions, does not come true as he predicted it would, he's false. God answered that question. You know, there's a reason why you want to be really careful when you're speaking on behalf of Yahweh, as we do on this in the second half of this program. What we say is that we are observing Yah's testimony and communicating Yahweh's testimony to you so that you come to understand what God said. That does not make us a prophet. What that makes us is simply someone who is conveying what God, who is the lone prophet, had to say. And what this school is trying to teach is somebody that can look at faces, look at dreams, look at rabbinical material, and become a soothsayer. This is akin to training someone to read tarot cards. Rather than speaking on behalf of God, they're going to speak on behalf of the adversary. You ought not listen to them. We'll be back with another segment of Shattering Myths after the commercial break. We're going to turn our attention to the world of Islam, because Judaism isn't the only religion that leads people astray. So does Islam. Shattering this, I had shared that we're going to turn our attention to Islam. The venue now is Egypt. This report is from Reuters. It reads that many Egyptian viewers were horrified when preacher Hisham El Ashri recently popped up on primetime television in the new Egypt that is now controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood to say that women must cover up for their own protection and advocated the introduction of religious police. Now, it's kind of interesting here in that the way this story begins is that what he is conveying is what is conveyed in the Quran and in the Hadith of Islam from Muhammad's own words. Muhammad told women to cover up for their own protection. And so the burqa that women walk around in a tent is because from their point of view, Muslim men cannot be trusted. That Muslim men will rape anything that walks if they can see that which is walking. But if it's under a tent, then somehow they will be precluded for doing it. Now, the other thing here that is being conveyed is that this preacher wants non-Muslim women to wear the same burqa, to cover themselves from head to toe, to walk around in a tent. Because he also knows that Muslim men will ravage non-Muslim women, thinking that it's their fair game, that it's okay for a Muslim man to rape a non-Muslim woman. And so he is telling non-Muslim women living in in Egypt, you need to wear the tent. You need to wear a burqa. Telling them to dress like they're a Muslim woman for their own protection, because he knows that Muslim men have been so indoctrinated, so corrupted, they can't be trusted. Now, this idea that he's advocated the introduction of religious police, nonsense. There has been a religious police in Egypt for a very long time. There's a religious police in most Islamic countries. They're like the Nazi Gestapo, where the Nazi Gestapo arrested anyone who didn't completely acquiesce to the Nazis' doctrine. Well, the same thing is true with the religious police, the Islamic police, in almost all Islamic countries. You are incarcerated for not completely acquiescing to all things Islam. In fact, a friend of mine who's written a series of books about his life as a scholar in Islam. He was educated at Al-Jahar University, which is the leading Islamic university in Cairo, and was hunted down by the religious police at the direction of his own father because he questioned some of the things that he had been told in Islam and was tortured by the religious police. They've been around for a very long time. Well, this article goes on to say, an obscure preacher could get publicity for such views was seen as another example of the confused political scene in Egypt since the revolt that toppled Hosni Mubarak and gave birth to a cacophony of feuding voices, is what Reuters had to say. Well, first of all, the fact that the views of a fundamentalist Muslim were aired on television shows that there is not a cacophony of feuding voices, that there is only one voice now in Egypt, and that is the voice of fundamentalist Islam. And so the very concept that that someone with Reuters could be confused that there were feuding voices now in the media in Egypt shows that they have no idea the nature of Islam and how Islam silences all voices except its own. This is a quote. I was once asked, if I came to power, would I let Christian women remain unveiled? And I said, if they want to get raped on the streets, then they can remain unveiled, Ashri told Nahar TV last week. So here is a Islamic imam on primetime television in Egypt, now that the Brotherhood is controlled, said that if Christian women don't wear the Islamic veil, don't accept the submission and hostility and sexism of Islam upon themselves, then they will be raped on the streets. So he's acknowledging that Muslim men are repulsive, that they have no judgment, that Muslim men will rape women on the streets. Now, introducing a Saudi-style anti-vice police force to enforce Islamic laws was, quote, not a bad thing, he said, and added, in order for Egypt to become fully Islamic, things like alcohol must be banned and all women must be covered. What hell have we wrought on the world? Has not the Arab Spring in Egypt turned into nothing more than an Islamic Reformation? And hasn't the consequence of that Islamic Reformation been unleashing the floodgates of hell on its people? Isn't this a horrific thing, not a good thing? I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. The next story is just too bizarre for words, but when I saw the headline, I thought, you know, I think I need to share this because it is way too bizarre for words. Germany's ruling coalition now is calling for a ban on bestiality. Now the fact that you would have to call a ban on it, that you would even acknowledge that something like bestiality exists and that you're saying, yeah, you know, this is not good. We don't want the Germans practicing bestiality. It is just beyond comprehension to me. But Nonetheless, the practice of having sex with animals is becoming illegal now in Germany.
I feel like they're like 4,000 years late on this.
Me think so as well. The German Parliament's agricultural committee. So this is coming from the sheep herders. The sheep are saying, hey, you know, I don't want to have to be raped. The German Parliament's agricultural committee is considering a legal amendment to describe sex with animals as inappropriate for the animals. I guess I don't know if the animals include the humans or not. But a hefty fine could be imposed on the offenders. A final vote is to be held in the High House. Germany, by the way, legalized bestiality, which is called zoophilia in Germany, in 1969, except when the animal suffered significant harm. So long as you don't harm the animal, you can be engaged in bestiality all you want. By the way, this is not unique to Germany, although legalizing it is pretty odd. If you were to go into the hotel rooms when a Muslim leader comes to the West and they in their hotel rooms, they will bring in sheep. And they will bring in sheep for the Islamic rulers to engage in bestiality. As a matter of fact, in the Little Green Book, which is Ayatollah Khomeini's sage insight into how a Muslim should behave, he has entire chapters devoted to bestiality. In fact, he goes so far as to say, you know, no problem with bestiality. You can do it with the goats and the sheep and the lambs and whatever you want to do it with. No problem with bestiality. But when you commit an act of bestiality with an animal, you cannot sell that animal for meat in your own community, but you can sell it in the community down the street.
You know, maybe they should ban the alcohol and cover up the sheep.
Talking about weird. Okay, but animal rights groups have campaigned for a change in the law, and the lead of the parliamentary's committee investigating the new amendment told a local newspaper that the new legislation was intended to clarify the current legal position, which legalizes bestiality. He says, with this explicit ban, it will be easier to impose penalties and to improve animal protection. So now, if you are in Germany and you commit an act of bestiality, you could suffer a fine of 25,000 euros. If someone forces an animal, that's only though, if someone forces an animal to commit actions alien to that species, end quote. So you mean to tell me that there is a way that you can get, I guess, a really cute little sheep, that you could get the sheep to say, I think I want to go have sex with that guy over there, and that would not be alien to the species? Michael Keok, who is the chairman of the pressure group Zoophile Engagement for Tolerance and Information. So this would be Bestiality Engagement for Tolerance and Information, which is called ZETA because of zoophile is the word for a bestiality participant, said that he was going to take legal action to fight the proposed changes. It is unthinkable, he said, that any sexual act with an animal is punished without proof that the animal has come to any harm, he said, adding that animals are capable of showing what they do or do not want to do. So he wants to take the testimony of the sheep. Now, I'm assuming that this is being done mostly with sheep. I guess if you were to try to do it with a grizzly bear, you may only do it once, kind of like a suicide bomber. we, you notice they're doing it with animals that aren't particularly adept at fighting back and their partners. You know, one's not going to do it with a female gorilla that would rip off your head. One's not going to do it with a lioness that would eat you for lunch.
My head hurts because of this story.
This is a quote from our zoophile. We see animals as partners and not as a means of gratification. We don't force anything on them. Animals are much easier to understand than women, said Mr. Keok.
Oh, God.
Now, bestiality is banned in many European countries, including the Netherlands, France, and Switzerland. The law was changed in the UK in 2003, which reduced the maximum sentence from life imprisonment to just 2 years. The act, however, is permissible in Belgium, Denmark, and Sweden, though Stockholm is considering a change in the legislation. You know, I've always been a believer that you cannot legislate morality. But, you know, if you're going to tell people that they can't speed on the highways, you ought to be able to tell them you can't go out there and have sex with an animal. Something kind of like baseline.
I'm still, like, I have never looked at an animal and thought, wow.
What?
You don't have to tell me that's wrong.
you don't have to. You know, God does speak about bestiality, and He does take the time to say, "Hey, by the way, it is wrong. You ought not. To do that." But you're sort of right. I mean, there's a baseline that says that's probably not a good idea.
There has to be something inside you that just says, you know, look, hey, that's not what I'm going to do. You know?
This next story is also amazing. It's about exorcisms and exorcists in the Vatican, and so I'm going to share it with you. Again, this is a story that came across my desk, and it just screams to be shared, even though it is weird in the extreme. So it reads: On March 10th of this past year, the chief exorcist of the Vatican, a Reverend Gabriel Amorth, who has held his demanding post for now 25 years, so he is the chief exorcist for the Roman Catholic Church. He was quoted as saying that the devil is at work inside of the Vatican. All right, so here's the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church's chief exorcist, and he's held the post for 25 years, and he was quoted recently as saying, the devil is at work inside of the Vatican. And that when one speaks of smoke of Satan in the holy rooms, it's all true, including these latest stories of violence and pedophilia. So here is the chief exorcist of the Vatican saying that the devil is, in fact, at play inside of the Roman Catholic Church. By the way, he's not saying anything that God himself didn't say when Yahusha dictated his seven open letters about the seven eras of that would transpire between the time that he gave his revelation to Yahochanan and his return. In three of those, he spoke of Roman Catholicism, of Christianity. And the first thing he said about Christianity was that it was the seat of Satan. So this chief exorcist is not saying anything that is inconsistent with what God had to say. So the article continues, this can perhaps be taken as confirmation that something horrible has indeed been going on in the holy precincts, though most inquiries show it to have a perfectly good material explanation. So while this guy says it's the devil at play, the writer of the article is saying it's just the material manifestation of evil within the Vatican. Concerning the most recent revelations about the steady complicity of the Vatican in the ongoing, indeed endless, scandal of child rape, a few days later, a spokesman for the Holy See, that would be the Pope, made a concession in the guise of a denial. It was clear, said Reverend Federico Lombardi, that an attempt was made to find elements to involve the Holy Father personally in issues of abuse. he stupidly went on to say, those efforts have failed. Well, Lombardi is an apologist for the Roman Catholic Church and for its Pope. The fact is that this current Pope was for a period of about 20 years head of the office that was specifically responsible for crimes being perpetrated by priests, and that he wrote letters which have gone directly to him that he himself signed, encouraging other priests to cover up these crimes. He was wrong twice, the article reads. In the first place, nobody has had to strive to find such evidence. It has surfaced, just as it was bound to. In the second place, this extension of the awful scandal to the topmost level of the Roman Catholic Church is a process that has only just begun, as opposed to already having failed. Yet it became, in a sense, inevitable when the College of Cardinals elected the vicar of the of Christ on Earth, the man chiefly responsible for the original cover-up. One of the sanctified voters in that election was Cardinal Burden Law of Boston, a man who had already found the jurisdiction of Massachusetts a bit too warm for his liking, so he moved back to the Vatican because, of course, the Boston Diocese has been convicted of aiding and abetting priestly pedophilia. These two separate issues are related matters. First, the individual responsibility of the Pope in one instance of his moral nightmare, and second, his more general and institutional responsibility for the wider law-breaking and the shame and disgrace that goes with it are all directly attributable to this man and find themselves at his doorstep. Now, we're going to return to this story about Satan in the Vatican and the complicity of the Roman Catholic Church in this evil when we return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yana. We're considering the realization that Satan is alive and well in the Roman Catholic Church. Its chief exorcist, the man who has held that post for 25 years, said that the devil was actively working in inside of the Vatican. And so a journalist decided to reveal that he was only partially right, that in fact, that as this exorcist said, that the devil was part of the promotion and cover-up of priestly pedophilic acts within the Roman Catholic Church. Well, this gentleman decided to say, well, you know, the reality is that the current Pope is actually to blame for the cover-up of pedophilic acts in the Roman Catholic Church. He continues his story with the following words. In 1979, an 11-year-old German boy identified as Wilfred F. was taken on a vacation trip to the mountains by a priest. After that, he was administered alcohol. He was locked in his bedroom. He was stripped naked. And he was forced to suck the unit of the priest. Now, we will limit ourselves to calling this sort of thing abuse. The offending cleric was transferred. This man who did all these things to this young boy was transferred from Essen to Munich for therapy at the direction of then Archbishop Joseph Ratzinger, the current pope. And assurances were given that he would no longer have children in his care. But it took no time for Ratzinger's deputy, Vicar General Gerard Gruber, to return him to pastoral work, where he soon resumed his career as a sexual pedophile. It is, of course, claimed that there will no doubt later be partially unclaimed, that Ratzinger himself knew nothing of the second outrage. I quote here from the Reverend Thomas Doyle, a former employee of the Vatican's embassy in Washington and early critic of the Roman Catholic Church's sloth in responding to child rape allegations. He says, nonsense. Pope Benedict is a micromanager. He is the old school style. Anything like that would necessarily have been brought to his attention. Tell the Vicar General to find a better line. What he's trying to do, obviously, is to protect the Pope. End quote. This is common or garden stuff. The very familiar to American and Australian and Irish Catholics whose children's rape and torture and the cover-up of the same by the tactic of moving the rapists and torturers from parish to parish has been painstakingly and comprehensively exposed. It's on the level with the recent and belated admissions by the Pope's brother, Monsignor Georg Ratzinger, that while he knew nothing about the sexual assault at a choir school that he ran between 1964 and 1994, now that he remembers it, he's sorry for his practice of slapping the boys around. So even his own brother abused children. You think this Ratzinger knew nothing of that? Very much more serious is the role of Joseph Ratzinger before the church decided to make him its supreme leader in obscuring justice on a global scale. After his promotion to cardinal, he was put in charge of the so-called Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, formerly known as the Inquisition. In 2001, Pope John Paul II placed his department in charge of the investigation of child rape and torture by Catholic priests. In May of that year, Ratzinger issued a confidential letter to every bishop. In it, he reminded them of the extreme gravity of a certain crime. But that crime was reporting the rape and the torture of children. The crime was not perpetrating the rape and torture. It was reporting the crime of rape and torture. The accusations intoned Ratzinger were only treatable within the church's own exclusive jurisdiction. Any sharing of the evidence with legal authorities or the press was utterly forbidden, according to Ratzinger. Charges were to be investigated in the most secretive way. This is a direct quote. In the most secretive way. Restrained by a perpetual silence. Again, quote. And everyone is to observe the strictest secret, which is commonly regarded as the secret of the Holy Office, under the penalty of excommunication, end quote. Ratzinger said that the crime, which would be punished by excommunication, was revealing the truth about how priests were abusing children. It wasn't the crime itself. And this man is now Pope. If you're a Roman Catholic, you're a fool. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of